Hi, I'd like to introduce Gary Parker, the technical manager, and Paul Williams, the health and safety manager from the Electrical Contractors Association, also known as the ECA. They've been long-term supporters of GateSafe, and we want to discuss the merits of understanding gate safety if you're in the electrical industry in any way. So with that, I'll start with the sort of questions I've got in mind. In the installations that your members do, obviously they're going to be involved in every gate automation installation in one form or another, whether it just be laying on a main spur. Have you any feeling for how many people are actually directly involved?
Don't think we necessarily ask those questions. I'm aware that we do have members who do install remote operate gates, but I couldn't give you exact figures. It is probably one of our niche areas. We tend to list installation work as either domestic or commercial and industrial, and then not go into too much granular detail on those ones. But we do have members I know that do install electronic gate systems.
Yeah, to add to that, it depends because the gate may be a one-off installation in a private dwelling, or it could be part of an estate that's being built. There could be a number of automatic entries, including pedestrian access, vehicle access. So our members might be involved as in terms of a larger project, multi-million pound estate developments, for example, in London, that involve those types of equipment. And they might be a principal contractor, or very often our members will be part of the supply chain that will be working for a tier one or a large contractor doing those sorts of installations.
And when they're doing that, do you think they're following the lead of the principal contractor, or are they seen to be the expert in their own right? One of the areas that we get concerned about is the automatic gate kits. You buy them from the manufacturer and they sort of lead you to believe there's everything there, but the reality is that the kits are far from complete.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of moving parts to this, aren't they? If you'll excuse the pun. And the underlying point is the design stage, isn't it? Before the gate is ever installed, thinking about the health and safety aspects. So the areas that obviously Gary would talk about the electrical from an occupational health and safety point of view, we'd expect our members to be looking at really trapping and crushing zones, because there have been some nasty accidents, which I'm sure you're aware of, Richard, of children particularly being killed by gates closing, where they've been passing through and the gates closed onto them and crushed them or been trapped. So looking at the danger areas of a gate mechanism, so that can be the actual moving part of the gate itself, where it moves next to a physical object, typically a wall, or sometimes shearing, where you can get a, if you like, an amputation effect from two parts of a gate moving across one another. So there are a number of danger areas that our members would have to consider as part of the risk assessment, and that's aside from the electrical safety issues. But there are certainly the design phase under CDM is where there's an opportunity to design out those sorts of risks.
Absolutely. You mentioned the two accidents where two kiddies were killed. That was the reason GateSafe was formed back in 2010. And at that point in time, I was involved directly in the gate industry. And it was a real eye-opener in the context of the accidents having happened and so many people just not being aware of the risks. We thought we knew what we were doing. And I think in the context of a lot of the industry, we were better than most, if not all of them. But there was so much ignorance by so-called professionals, and whether that be the architects or the contractors, and that's an ongoing battle that we've been fighting all along. You mentioned about the various hazards. You're right, they are the sort of basic crush shear around the gate and around the gate post mechanisms, whatever else. But I question whether the average Sparky is sort of aware enough of those or knows where to look for help.
I think a lot of what our members do will be coming from the principal contractor to an extent. From my experience, a lot of the members will supply to a gate. I am aware that we do have some members that are automated gate specialists, and they are specialists in that field and will do everything around it. But I think, as Paul mentioned there, the design phase of the CDM. Our members will typically, not always, typically just take a supply to the gate and maybe not actually install the gate themselves. That will be done by others. But that will come down to the contract and exactly what they've priced to do.
The other area that we sort of concern with on the electricity art is where they become what we call the active edge installer. They're doing other works on the site. And, you know, while you're here, can you just? And they look at the instructions, they think, how hard can it be? Mm. You know, really, with any profession, risk assessment is what it's all about. If you're a risk assessment advocate, you've got to understand the risks around the gate.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm confident that our members are very au fait and robust with the risk assessment process in general. And we actually have a useful piece of software called ERAMS, which helps our members carry out effective risk assessments. However, it is important to look at the risks in the round and not just focus on the electrical risks in terms of the physical hazards and the danger zones, as we've just discussed before. And also then the other area you mentioned, the accidents to the children, Richard, that take part of that risk assessment process is taking into account those who are more vulnerable. So it might be young people, it might equally be older people, so it might be people who are slower, or it might be people that have eyesight issues as well. So yeah. Those sorts of things need to be taken into account. And I would say that whilst I think our members are very effective when it comes to this, there's always no harm in publicising and emphasising the need to do a robust risk assessment. Looking at things like, you know, gaps between closing edges, opposing edges, and the parts of the drive which are capable of causing injury. That all includes also drawing in as well as crushing injuries as well, of course.
The other area that we've seen probably almost as we've seen more accidents, even in the direct automation type accidents, is where there's been mechanical failure. For example, where sliding gates don't have adequate end stops, or end stops are falling over the run by full, gate post not being sort of mechanically sound enough to support the gate and fall them. And that runs into maintenance as well. People need to understand when they're doing the maintenance on a gate, with all due respect to the electrician, it's not just the electrical factor, but as you alluded to earlier, they've got to look at the whole machine. Which is the gate, the RAM, the intercom, and the electrical connection.
Yeah, right. That reminds me of the fatality in Ireland in, I think, about 2017, 18, where the gate fell on the child. So it was the actual gate itself fell off its mechanism and crushed a child, 5-year-old little girl, to death. So there's that side of things too.
Yeah.
I think with the sort of work our members do, electrical risks are standard, and that's the norm, that's what they expect, that's what they do. Where it comes to something different, be it a gate, be it a motor, be it any large installation, there are other risks, and that's different for every single job. And it's no different for a reasonable size automated gate, and contractors should be aware of those risks and should be aware of the dangers and should look at them in the full light of day on each job individually.
One of the things I think we'd like to try and get over to your members is if there is any cause for concern, if they've got any worries, you know, they're really welcome to phone up GateSafe for sort of instant help. And obviously, if they feel they want to take it further, there's the full-blown training that they can do, which will support them fully. But, you know, first and foremost, if they're in doubt, pick up the phone. We've recently had an installation where someone was being pushed into doing a job, and he phoned up and spoke to a technical manager here and eventually decided the work wasn't for him because he wasn't qualified to do it, you know, which is great to hear from our point of view. But, you know, equally, there have been other people that phone up, get the same sort of advice and say, can I book on the training? Touching on training, we're doing it more and more online. Is that something you're favouring, or?
I think one of our key drivers over the last few years has been competence and increase in competence. And gate installations, fire alarm, hazardous areas, you could throw them all into the same mix and say, just because you're skilled and competent at working on this type of building does not mean you're skilled and competent at working on this type of building. There is a difference, and we've been encouraging training in all guises for donkey's years now. And certainly with the advent of the pandemic, online training was fantastic for many people. Some courses do necessitate a live visit and a bit of hands-on training. Some certainly can be done online. But a general awareness course for any form of safety online is fantastic. It can be done at your leisure. If they then need some additional training and follow-up specialisms, better, great. But online training, we've seen lots of people using it. Podcasts like this, training, toolbox talks, etc. They all help just to build that competence up in whatever field it is that you're working in.
Yeah, I'd echo that and say that we certainly encourage and have seen a mushrooming of online learning, obviously as a result of the pandemic, but also people realising the accessibility to online training platforms.
Exactly, yeah.
And certainly, Richard, both Gary and I will advocate GateSafe as an option, because ECA are members of GateSafe, as you said. So in terms of helping develop and ensure competence, you know, that's one thing we can do. And it ties in nicely as well with the Building Safety Act, which came into law this year, which is about competence partly, and the HSE now having a requirement to drive competence in the construction industry. It ties in really well with that whole agenda. So we're certainly advocates of that, and will help encourage and support knowledge and understanding about gate installation and hazards that may not be obvious to those working on them.
The Health and Safety Executive, although they are very useful, from our conversations with them, they're vastly understaffed. So although they've got the power and the wherewithal to push people in the right direction, generally speaking, they haven't got the manpower, which is where we feel that we've got to do as much as possible to support everything they're doing down the line.
Yeah.
The other things that are on that same vein, what else do you think GateSafe can do to help your members?
Awareness of you as an organisation across our members. So that for those members, when they do come across this type of work, be it you know, a gate, automatic door, anything that might involve your expertise, that people are aware of you, because whilst it's important that we promote you, your organisation and the access to it, I think that's the single biggest thing, Richard, is getting your brand, if you like, out there so people know that you exist and actually what you can do to support them.
Yeah, I was just going to say something very similar to Paul there. It's giving people access and letting them know who to access. If you can train the industry to make an awareness of this product, of this campaign, brilliant. It's very hard to get the end user to be aware of it, but it's an equally important thing. But it's a big old country, and there's a lot of people out there. So to get that reach out to that far is very, very difficult. But supporting ECA at our events, our roadshows, that's all good. Doing these sort of things that we can share communications on. We've also got magazines that I'm sure our comms department would be delighted for you to partake in and offer articles and guidance, both electronic and physical magazines. We still make a real magazine.
Yeah.
So if you wish to support ECA and we can support GateSafe, then I'm sure that would be music to the guys' ears in communications.
One of the other things that we're going back sort of full circle now, one of the initiatives that we're looking at for the coming year is safety by design. You touched on some of the risks, but when you look at the average gate, there are so many basic accidents waiting to happen because it hasn't got the required number of hinges, the suitability of the posts, you know, you name it. They can be a list as long as your arm. that again is something that we are going to be promoting. We'd really welcome your support there.
More than happy to help with that. You know, and as you say, there are so many factors. In, you know, you mentioned some. There's also pressure sensitive light barriers, infrared, all of those sorts of controls that can be built in to help reduce risk as well. So our members knowing about all of that and having the wherewithal to make sure they're installed properly is really important to us.
One of the things that we advocate with all of the safety is, you know, the design is front end, and that's a long way down the line. But going beyond that, non-contact safety, we believe, is fundamentally the first line of defence, because our argument there really is if the gate hits you, it's too late.
Yeah.
And as you said earlier, Paul, as someone sort of infirm, slow moving, if they get hit, they're probably less capable of withstanding a bit of a thump than a younger soul. Getting out of the way quickly enough, it'll do them more damage. For a non-contact person, then the safety edges and the like would be the last resort.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And also your positive pressure controls, so that you have to maintain pressure on a control for it to operate rather than the other way around. Yeah. So there are a number of things that are basic stuff, as you say, that people can do.
Yeah. I think also people should be aware of quality products as well. Forgive me, Richard, I'm not sure if this is something that you are aware of, but we've noticed of late there's been an increase in suspect quality products infiltrating the market, and genuinely people don't go out to buy them. Sometimes the wholesalers and suppliers have been given incorrect products, so it's vital that we speak to our members and tell them to check the quality of a piece of cable, for instance, and ensure that it is what it actually says it is, and to make sure they've got the appropriate type marks, standards, whatever it is associated with it. And I'm sure that's the same for the gate industry. I imagine you guys would heavily push quality products and try and ensure people use the right equipment and the right tools and the right methods.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that sort of goes hand in hand with that is where money is getting tighter for everyone, is very tempting to cut corners. And if you've got a gate operator that's normally X and you get off a 1.5X, it's tempting, but the risk is just far too great. From our point of view, we'd rather people didn't automate a gate than automated it either without the right safety or without CE marked quality materials. When you're installing a gate, and I'm probably teaching them fuckheads here, but you know, you have the gate, the motor, the controls, the intercom, whatever else, and you have to CE mark that whole unit as a machine. But to do that reliably or as required, the individual components have to be CE marked as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you open the box up with a radio control on it, do you expect it to be dodgy? And the truth is, probably in this day and age, you don't. So you're relying on the wholesalers as well.
And of course, there's the legal framework, you know, the conformity supply of machinery regulations and things like that as well that govern that. So there are some standards to look at there.
In terms of the gate, basically it's a machinery trait to, you know, within that there are various other components as well.
Yep. You know,
if we go back to one of the other problems that you get, the cost of an accident is immense. One of the accidents in Wales where the kiddie was killed, virtually everyone in the supply chain was interviewed under caution. And I think I'm right in saying that went back to the manufacturers of the equipment as well. So in the event of an accident, you know, the consequences are very serious, and no one can sort of say, well, I didn't know, because if you're doing that for the job, you're expected to know.
And also the legislation has moved on. CDM 2015 has introduced this requirement in terms of design for the end user as well, in terms of maintenance and use. So that's an extra caveat and requirement that our members need to take into account.
Just touching on that for a moment, that's one of the other areas that we struggle with, getting the architects involved. Listening, you know, going back to my previous life, if you talk to an architect at the beginning of a job, invariably you would get the right result for everyone concerned. But when you come along to try and sort of sort out the mess that someone else has created, both more costly and probably not quite as effective. Do you have any inroads into the architectural areas at all?
They tend not to be our members and our bag. We tend to deal with the contractors and the designers, the consultants. A friend of mine who was a mechanical engineer, he had a friend who was an architect. He said, I spent 5 years at university learning how to design heating systems using maths and science, and he spent 5 years doing colouring in, which I thought was possibly a little bit unfair to the architect. But our members tend to focus on the installers, the designers and the consultants. And it's the consultants that we deal with at an early part of the stage. The architects give a indicative design and the consultants will then come in and, in some cases, with the instruction of the client, try and value engineer it. And that's where we're seeing a big change now, that the value engineering is not as harsh as it used to be and is certainly being more questioned, especially since Hackett's report came out, and looking at the job as not being the cheapest, but being a good job, the right equipment and the right materials and the right skills of the people doing it, and making sure that those are checked. So although we don't have an awful lot of reach into the architectural world per se, we do via the consultants and the designers and the specifiers, and that's where our membership stops, I suppose, after after the contractors.
Yeah. Well, certainly, that's another area that Gateslope would be more willing to help with any of the consultancy type work, because again, you know, our basic job is try and save any more accidents, and how we do it, I don't particularly care as long as we're successful.
I suppose to add to what Gary is saying is very, very often the architect is employed by the client rather than our members very often. And it's the client will then produce the design and the specification, which our members then, as Gary was saying, actually do the work to bring into life.
Yeah.
So that certainly is an area to look at in terms of FM companies or client companies that are particularly... I would say one of the biggest sectors is social housing. So your big landlords like Peabody, like Network Homes and L&Q in London, for example, where they're building many thousands of dwellings, they will have, almost inevitably have, automatic gate systems.
Yeah. Going back to 2010 again, both of those accidents were in a social housing background.
Yeah, so that says it all.
Absolutely, no on my head.
Yeah, I think it's not a single approach, is it, to safety? It's a multifaceted approach. It's the contractor, it's the designer, it's the consultant, it's the client, the people representing the client, it's the primary contractor. It's everybody involved. It's a big piece of work, but it's vital. And I think we're, as a country now, we're fairly sensible when it comes to safety. We know about this sort of thing, and it's just a case of finding these issues, shining a spotlight on them, highlighting them, and bringing them to the attention of the correct people. And I don't think it's a one trick will fix the problem. It's many, many different approaches, and fingers crossed, hopefully we'll get there, and those horrific and scandalous accidents that we mentioned earlier should be a thing of the past.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed for your time. I'd like to, again, reiterate anything that Gateslope can do, we're more than willing to help. Thank you very much, Paul and Gary.
And likewise from ECA as well. If you feel we can support you, if you've got any events or anything that you'd like us to be involved in, this sort of message is, from, I'm sure Paul will agree, is absolutely critical to our members doing the best job that they possibly can and making sure that at the end of the day, everybody goes home safe.
Yep. Quite right. Yeah, I echo that completely. Thanks for your time, Richard.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.